Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast of Bruegel. My name is Guntram Wolf and I'm the director of Bruegel. And today I'm very pleased and honored to host Luis Garucano from Renew Europe, an eminent member of the European Parliament and very much involved in the discussion on Next Generation EU, the new budgetary instrument that the EU is about to create. Welcome, Luis.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So Luis, the big topic and the big topic here in town in the last weeks has been the European Recovery and Resilience Fund, which is the biggest part of the Next Generation EU project. It's a lot of money that the European Commission will take up, borrow in the financial markets in the coming years, and not only lend, but actually give as grants to EU member states. Now, many, including myself, have raised concerns about how we can make sure that EU borrowed money is going to be well spent if the money only goes to member states and if there's very little control. Now, you also have been thinking quite a bit about this issue, and the European Parliament is also debating this issue. The Council is also debating the issue. And I was just wondering whether you could kick us off by giving us your view on where this debate currently stands, where you think it should go, and where you think it will go.
So indeed, Guntram, I share very much the concern that you have expressed. This is a huge step forward for Europe if things go well, but it could be a huge step backwards in which we would fall into an endless cycle of recriminations and anger if this money ends up being an endless source of corruption and trouble. I think it's quite clear, seeing the shares of GDP that are involved in terms of net transfers for some countries, like Croatia, 10%. I mean, we're talking about very, very large numbers. And it's going to be hard, to put it mildly, for countries to spend 70% of that money within the next 2 years and spend it well. So from the European Parliament, my main concern is to have the mechanisms in place that ensure that there is good control, that there are good rules, and the money is well spent. Of course, the key obstacle here are member states, in particular some member states who just want a check. They want to think of the European Union as a cash dispenser, and they don't want to think of reforms and checks and controls and balances. They just want to get the money and run.
Indeed. I mean, one idea, of course, of this recovery fund was to have quick access to additional funding for the member states so that they could spend that money very quickly and, you know, basically give a boost to the recovery. The problem seems to me, historically, disbursements from the EU budget have taken a very long time. My colleague Joel Davash has studied this in some detail, and he shows that often less than 50% of the money is disbursed and spent within the first 7 years of the multi-annual financial framework. Now it's all going to be happening in the next couple of years. So how are we going to square the circle?
No, this is a big concern. I mean, countries like, for example, mine have had traditionally, precisely the countries that have bigger needs, have a weaker administrative state, and as a result have traditionally been not very good at managing to spend the money. There is a bit of a trade-off. There's a trade-off between spending the money and spending it well. The faster you want to go, the more countries are likely to use connections, big companies. A big company, you know, if you tell them that you have a lot of money, they're always going to find a way to spend it, which is not what we want. We want it to get to the SMEs. We want it to get to the productive tissue. We want it to be spending reforms. And so if we want to go very fast, the risk is that we won't do it very well. And here the duty that countries have is to try to accomplish both things, to improve dramatically the absorption capacity at the same time as they improve the quality of the reforms and investments. How to do that? I think what I've always said in Spain, and I'm participating in the debate there quite actively, is you need to do things in a different way if we want to have different results. And that means, in particular, they need to have a specific office, not just spread the money in the ministries and ask them to spend it. And a specific reform office is necessary that has the ability to spend, that has extremely high-quality staff, hires for 3 or 4 years. We have technical support instrument funds from the European Union that can easily be spent in this. So there is the ability to do something different. The problem is do politicians want to do that? In Spain, I'm having big doubts, and in some other countries, there are question marks. For politicians, you know, in a moment where the coffers are empty, the temptation to ensure their re-election and spread the money around is really always very, very high.
I mean, before talking about the politics, let's spend one more. And you are, after all, a politician, but you are also an economist, of course, and a very prominent and well-known economist, formerly at the London School of Economics. So let's just spend one more minute on the economics. And let me try to push you a little bit on essentially the issue of fungibility of money and additionality of EU money. I mean, so we have this very strange EU fiscal framework where essentially all the spending is happening at the national level, and now there's some borrowing at the EU level, and the money is given to the member states, and the member states use that money to just spend things which they would have spent money on anyway. Germany, for example, is already saying, well, we're going to use this in that way in our budget and just build it into the budget. After all, money that goes to a major spender, it's fungible, right? I mean, you use it, and even if you use it for a specific project, it frees up resources elsewhere. So isn't the real issue more the reform part? I mean, so making sure that the first layer of the money is well spent, that's for the appearance, but then making sure that the overall strategy of government spending, of government policy, is appropriate and is growth enhancing.
So I think you're very right to point out that contradiction and that a bit confusion on how this money should be spent. Is it just money, as some countries are trying to pretend, that goes into the general budget, or are these projects that have a European value added, etc.? I think my view is that this is European money for European projects. And this has to be things that have European value added. And Europe has said there are several aspects of additionality here that Europe has pointed out, which are the digitalization. For example, there is something clearly additional in many countries. The Commission has talked about digitalized administration. Can we digitalize the justice system, the property registers? Can we digitalize the health data, which in many countries has been a problem now? That's all additional. And these are projects that were not in the books. And my view is that the second idea, which is doing reforms as opposed to just sticking it into the budget and doing investments that you wouldn't do otherwise, is what this money, European taxpayers are giving it for. Merkel and Macron talked about that when they made the deal. The Council talked about that in the language. The Commission has talked about that in the paperwork. And now the states are doing something different. So that difference that you're pointing out exists. How to resolve it? I would say, first, I agree with you completely on the reforms. I mean, it's crucial that there are reforms, because otherwise this money is spent. It's just like, it's not so much money in the grand scheme of things. Net 3 points of GDP after giving back the loans, etc., for Spain. Okay, that's not going to change the macro outlook if you just spend it. It's money that needs to be kind of the soap that makes, or the oil that makes the reforms kind of easy to accept and easy to undertake. But the thing that allows you to give back the money and to come out of the hole is to have an economy that is able to grow more in the longer run. You can only do that with reforms. And countries need to commit to reforms. But first, they have to commit to not undoing past reforms, which in Spain, the government is talking about doing. Some ministers have talked about raising pensions. Other ministers have talked about the labor reforms that were the only successful, really strong reforms in 2012 by the Popular Party. Italy has talked about lowering taxes. I am terrified of lowering taxes. I think this is exactly the kind of thing that some country uses temporary money for a permanent increase in structural deficit by lowering taxes. DiMaggio in Italy talked about this, and I think this can really make us dig a bigger hole than we were in before. So the solution is, first, let's demand these reforms, let's ensure the reforms comply. Here the risk is, because the big countries want to do the money, use the money the way they want, it's going to be difficult for them to demand from the countries which actually needs these reforms to do them. And second, in my view, and I agree with you that money is fungible, but make sure that this money is the complement of those reforms, so that the reforms and the investments help each other out.
Well, let's talk a bit about the politics and the major political players here. And you already mentioned, of course, some of them, especially the member states. And you mentioned Macron, Merkel, and the Council. Now, let me challenge you first a little bit on the European Council. If you look at what the European Council did, it did change quite a bit the original proposal that the European Commission came up with when the next generation EU was negotiated. And what it changed, it cut not the money that would go to the member state, it cut the money that is at the EU level and where supposedly the European value added is most clearly visible and most clearly identifiable. So is it really true that at the level of the European Council, the European value added is the key, or isn't it in the end the money going to the member states?
I think sadly it's the second. I think the European Council has shown that what they want now is to get the money and run. And what we are seeing are efforts by many countries in the Council, let's see how many, and let's see how the trilogues go, to weaken the conditions on the facility, to facilitate a usage with little control, and definitely not to use the money in European value-added projects. I think this is the role of the Parliament. Of course, the Parliament has many groups that are, many parties that are very close or in power or in coalitions in different member states. So the Parliament feels the pressure from those governments, logically. I would hope that the Parliament is able to push for some independent bodies to check the expenditure, for some audits, etc., to ensure that the European plans are actually not just painted on top blue, but that there's actually European priorities. And the European Parliament will have to be the counterpoint, because the Council won't do it.
Yeah, give us a bit more of a sense of the European Parliament. I mean, there's the Commission, of course. The European Commission is the institution that actually borrows the money, and it is the institution that then gives the money to the member states. So it really is the institution that is responsible in front of the markets, and is responsible also, I would say, in front of citizens across Europe for that money. And the Commission tries, I think, even if it is well-intended, which I actually believe it is well-intended to make sure that the money is well spent, but it's not in a terribly strong position vis-a-vis the member states unless it gets some backing from the Parliament.
Yes, it has always been the case in the construction of Europe, indeed, as you're hinting, that commissions which rely on Parliament have a stronger position vis-a-vis member states. That was the case, particularly, for example, in the past, of the Delors Commission. It's been recently the case of the Juncker-Schultz axis in the previous commission, where the President of the Parliament and the President of the Commission had this very strong relation. When the Commission doesn't support itself in the Parliament, then it basically becomes a tool of the member states. The sense that we all get of that council that you were mentioning, in which the member states eliminate all the money that was due to European projects, is that the Commission didn't put up a big fight. There is no sense that the Commission President was really an actor fighting for this money. And the sense we get further is that the Commission President and the Commission is closer to the member states than to the Parliament. So that means the Commission is weaker, the member states are stronger, and also the Parliament is weaker because it doesn't have that access. The two real European institutions are the Commission and the Parliament. The desire that we would all have would be that those two institutions would be working together. But that's not right now as much the case as has been sometimes in the past.
Right. So quite a bit of pessimism, I guess, that I hear here.
I mean, if you allow me to give a positive note there, Guntram, I don't want people, if at the end some of these European programs are cut, etc., I don't want people to feel, oh, Europe failed this year. When we put these proposals on the table in April and March, etc., some of us, I mean, nobody really thought that borrowing by the Commission of this kind of money was really possible. The Parliament pushed it in the first resolution, the Parliament pushed it in the second resolution, then Merkel Macron came, and all of this seemed science fiction. And then suddenly we have this huge European solidarity program, and that's a huge success. And we can't kind of now look back and say, oh, it was terrible. I mean, we Europeans tend to be always negative about what happens. The truth is, this is
a huge success.
It's a huge success for European solidarity. Now, as we said at the very start, we need to make sure the money is well spent. That's the only thing that really could turn the success into a failure.
Indeed, I think this is absolutely central, and I totally agree with you that the whole program came at a moment where really it was needed. And the decision in May, the Franco-German decision and, I mean, agreement, and then, of course, the July European Council were major breakthrough moments, which then, I mean, actually were also perceived as such in financial markets. I mean, you can really see how spreads decreased and how the euro appreciated around those times. So I think it's a strong sign of confidence. But I think, again, I think as we both have emphasized, if later on there's a big backlash, that's the real worry. And so that's why accountability and good spending is very important. So let me ask you, as a politician, I mean, this is what you would like to see. How strong do you think will we end up in the end? I mean, the big fight now, if I see correctly, is on the rule of law. I mean, the Commission has come out very strongly with these reports on the rule of law across countries. Commission Europa has come out with a very strongly worded interview. The Parliament is also involved in this debate. I mean, where will we end up in this?
So I think the Parliament is very united on this. Indeed, the three groups have talked very strongly about the need for a strong rule of law mechanism. They have also said that the last proposals on the table from the presidency are very insufficient. We will start trilogues very, very soon. Those proposals, by the way, were opposed by interesting coalition in the presidency, in the council. They were opposed by the countries that don't want a rule of law mechanism, Hungary and Poland, and by the countries that want an even stronger one, which were the frugal four. This could yield a complicated coalition eventually, which would be worrying that we actually get a blockage because something is too much, something is too little. In Parliament, I think there is a very clear view that the last proposals are too narrow in scope and allow for only very narrow violations, and that they are insufficiently strong in terms of what kind of mechanisms they require to be approved. I think Parliament is going to push on this, and I think that we will have strong progress, or else there's going to be blockage.
You're saying that in extremis, the Parliament could let the whole thing fail?
I think the Parliament has a very kind of tricky position with the RRF, but I don't think the Parliament has such a tricky position with the multi-annual financial framework. And I don't think the people are as clear on this as they could. And the idea is the following. If we don't vote the MFF, because then the ceilings on the previous MFF are inherited, and the ceilings of the previous MFF allow for a bigger budget in 2021 than the one currently expected. If Parliament doesn't vote on the MFF, we will have budget for 2021, and that budget will actually potentially be even better than the one we are anticipating. So it's true what you're hinting at, that on the actual mechanism, the facility, it's hard for Parliament to say, well, we won't allow for this facility to take off. We will want this facility to take off. But it's also true that we have particularly quite a bit of bargaining power in the MFF. Of course, at the moment, we're just dealing with the whole package at the same time. But I do think that the bargaining power is a bit higher than it could be seen. Apart from the rule of law, we want to set up mechanisms and the kind of amendments that I've done from Renew together as a shadow rapporteur on this mechanism, on the governance of the Next Generation EU, involve an increased role for the national parliament so that basically, there are delegated acts for each plan, and the European Parliament gets a vote on each plan. On the EU institutions, we are asking for Olaf and the Public Prosecutor's Office to have a role, which is not now ensured. Olaf to have a consolidated database of all the beneficiaries so that we can track what's going on with the money. We want national institutions to validate the public bodies that they have, and particularly the fiscal, independent fiscal agencies of national institutions to be involved. And we want to make sure that there are all the measures necessary for the member states to detect and correct conflicts of interest and corruption. And we've done a whole list. So from Parliament, we're going to do our best to ensure that there are the set of mechanisms by European institutions, by national parliament, by European Parliament, to ensure that this money is well spent. And this is not just a rule of law issue. This is a corruption, good governance, etc. issue, which, honestly, if you throw in 10% of GDP, as some countries are going to get as net transfer in a couple of years, you can imagine the friends and family of the presidents in some places are going to jump, run with some of this European money. And we have to prevent that.
Well, let me end with one concluding question, which really concerns the issue of taxation and corporate taxation, and the fact that some companies manage with aggressive tax planning to avoid paying taxes, and you know, basically paying taxes only in a few member states of the EU. I mean, this topic has come up repeatedly, and it is now also again mentioned by Italy and also by relevant Commissioner for Economic and Financial Affairs, Paolo Gentiloni. It was also mentioned by Olaf Scholz in a recent speech at Brügel, where he clearly said, well, if we move towards fiscal union, tax arbitrage across countries is really not acceptable. What's your view on this? What's the view in your party on this also, in your group? And where do you think this debate will end up?
I think my view is that I share the diagnosis that you just made. It's unacceptable that we have this kind of tax optimization strategies whereby some internet company pays a few thousand euros in a country, as now it's currently the case for corporate taxes. It's really a travesty of what a tax system should be, and taxpayers really resent that, rightly, and we have to do our best to change it. In the Council right now, tax matters are resolved by unanimity, so the small member states that profit from these holes are really resisting. In Parliament, I think there are increasing majorities. Every time we make a resolution on disclosure, this idea that country-by-country reporting, where companies have to report how much they pay and how much they make in each country, there is clear majorities. In Council, this issue of transparency, which Germany, in theory, supports, has voted against. We were very, very close in the last Councils to a majority on the position of Parliament. This would be a big breakthrough if we have transparency. But beyond that, we need a common consolidated corporate tax base. We need a tax base that means the same thing everywhere, that companies cannot just play these games to avoid paying taxes. This is something that we should have considered as Europeans before capital freedom was allowed, before capital mobility was allowed in the single market. That's the moment where we could just say, well, if you want free movement, you have to subscribe to these rules. Sadly, it wasn't done for reasons that escaped me, and we should ask, some of the negotiators for Spain, what happened? It was apparently a Mitterrand-Schroeder deal. I don't know exactly why, or a Mitterrand-Pold, sorry. And Felipe González told me that there was a change in positions in the last minute. I don't know why. This is for you to potentially ask Commission and study on. But this was a huge hole in the single market because basically it induces a form of competition, which for a small player, go below, charge basically no taxes. And what you lose on the taxes that people were paying is very little. What you gain on the millions of companies you invite is enormous. I mean, an extreme form of this is Malta selling these golden passports and making something like 10% of GDP on it. It's really insane. We have to remove these ways to compete, which are not competing, but basically stealing from everybody else.
Wonderful. I mean, we could continue debating these issues, of course, forever. But I think we've exhausted our time. Luis, this was really wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your thinking. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to our podcast. And if you want more information on any of these issues discussed, please go to our website at www.brügel.org. Thank you again, Luis Garicano from Renew Europe, Spanish MEP and a major player. Deputy head of the Economic and Social Affairs. So thank you so much for sharing your thinking with us today.
Yes, thank you, Gunther.